Before we get to this week's episode, we want to remind you that while this show will always be free, we also have a Patreon where you can get even more fandom. Visit patreon.com/thefandomshow, where, for a couple bucks a month, you can listen to episodes early, you can check out our nerds letter, or you can listen to our patron-exclusive The Fan Club, where we watch movies that one of us loves and the other has never seen. Once more, that's patreon.com/thefandomshow, but you're already doing the most supportive thing, which is just listening. So thank you so much, and let's get to the episode. Hello, 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 and welcome to The Fandom Show, the podcast where we learn about fantastic fandoms by talking to our favorites about their favorites. I am Kaya Green.
And I am Stephanie Malik.
And what is the topic today, you ask? Well, elementary, dear Watson. Today, we are talking about the one, the only Sherlock Holmes.
Oh, very excited for this episode.
I think a lot of people are. We've had a lot of engagement on this one. A lot of people are very stoked to talk about this individual and his wonderful, wonderful friend.
He is iconic. So, Kaya, what do you know about Sherlock Holmes, the character,
well,
the creation?
I know he is one of the most depicted characters in all of Western canon. Like, he has been in more movies, more books, more everything than any other single character. I know that when I was young, my grandfather gave me a copy of the collected works, and I read about half of it. And I really want to go back and read more of it. But yeah, I know that there have been many, many adaptations, but I haven't read through it in quite a while. Steph, what about you? What do you know?
Embarrassingly little. truly. I mean, when the Sherlock BBC show came on, I watched like the first season of that.
Yeah. Watched a lot of that.
But beyond that, I've watched like
the Robert Downey Jr. ones.
But beyond those two adaptations, I really don't have a solid understanding other than like what the zeitgeist teaches you about Sherlock. So that makes me extra excited for today's episode because I'm so excited to learn from someone who knows a lot about Sherlock. We have Molly Knox Ostertag, who is the creator of the graphic novels The Witch Boy Trilogy, The Girl from the Sea, and the upcoming Deep Dark, as well as a TV writer for shows including The Owl House. Molly, welcome to the show.
Welcome.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me again. I have to be an insufferable nerd immediately.
I love it.
That's the point.
The second most adapted character, Dracula, is the first.
Sherlock
Holmes is the second.
I
feel like now that he's in public domain, we might be able to give Dracula a run for his money. But I felt the need to clarify.
No, that's very important.
I saw your hand go up and you're like,
it's very important. He is. I think, what was the thing? I read he was the first most human adapted character. I should have clarified.
Oh.
That's good. It's important. It's very important.
It is.
It's
important clarification.
We need to know.
And I should say, I think when it comes to clarifications, I should say I really like the original Arthur Conan Doyle stories. That's what I've been doing my little deep dive into. So I'm like exploring other adaptations slowly, but I feel like that's like, there's like whole other worlds.
Oh yeah.
With other adaptations. So I'm very much, I love me some like 1895 Victorians.
Yeah.
Like, let's go to the source and like get it.
Yeah, we're getting to the core of it.
Exactly.
That is our main focus because there's too many versions of this to even get too deep in. I was reading an article that was just like, the 100 best Sherlock Holmes. They're like, there's a bunch that we haven't included. And I was like, okay, that's so much.
Wild.
I can't get deep into that.
Yeah, so we're going right back to the OG.
I haven't been obsessed with this for very long. I think I can date it to like September of last year, and it's March of this year. And so, yeah, it's felt, I'm like, oh God, the watch list is piling up, and I can only get my spouse to agree to so many of these, like, so much homework just to feel like I'm an expert.
Yeah, I have this problem in that I really would like to get into Star Trek at some point, but just the amount of it that there is, it always feels like, when will I have the time to do that? What is your origin story in getting into Sherlock Holmes? Like, what sparked this for you?
So if I really like didn't read them as a kid or anything, or have really any association beyond, like, again, the zeitgeist, the deerstalker hat, the little pipe. I was like, I suppose it's it seems like it's gay in some way, or some people view it as being gay. But I really, like, that wasn't enough to pique my interest, because that's like a lot of things. And then I think I was in a hotel with my spouse, and we turned on the TV, and it was playing one of the Robert Downey Jr. films. Mm-hmm. And I just immediately was like, this kind of seems like my vibe. I like a devoted, like, sidekick.
Devoted companion.
Chaotic protagonist, like, that is like something that I'm very compelled by. So we sat down to watch them properly, and they hit me really hard. Like, I was really surprised. I've like shown them to a few people and been like, no, these are genuinely really good films. So I really, really enjoyed them. And what I loved the most about them was that they felt like a very interesting portrait of queer masculinity in the Victorian era. And it's obviously like through the like Guy Ritchie action movie 2009 yeah. lens, but I really could like pick up on those themes that I think were quite intentional. And so that made me want to read the books and then want to kind of read about queer Victorians in general and just like get the context. So I think it's been a little bit hand in hand with like trying to also understand queer history from that time and that place. So yeah, kind of all of that has worked together in a really fun way where now I just know far too much about like 1895, like Molly houses in Victorian London, and like Ooh. What laws were passed, and like Oscar Wilde's trial. Like, I just am like deep in there.
I love this as a deep dive. It's not great. Just Sherlock. It's just like, let's find out about the queer ecosystem.
I mean, it's the fun thing of fandoms is that you get into one fandom, it takes you down into a whole other rabbit hole of fun information. I think I read Am I wrong to say that he was friends with Oscar Wilde, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle?
Yes. It's actually really interesting. They had a dinner. I think they had a publisher in common who introduced them, and they had a dinner. And at that dinner, Arthur Conan Doyle came up with the idea for Sherlock Holmes.
What?
And Oscar Wilde came up with the idea for the portrait of Dorian Gray.
What?
For the picture of Dorian Gray. Isn't that crazy?
That's so wild.
And Holmes is like very clearly based on Wilde. Like, all his little witticisms, like he's an aesthetic, like he's aesthetic, like he's very clearly like a mimic.
Wow.
Yeah. So they were friends, which is like one of the little red strings in my tapestry of Sherlock Holmes
of,
is gay.
Of is gay.
Oh my God.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Cause I read that and I was like, well, I mean, you can't be friends with Oscar Wilde and not think about that. But the fact that, yeah, it was one dinner, that's wild. No pun intended.
Yeah, and I think they were friends afterwards. There's like a beautiful Doyle quote where he's like, I think about that dinner all the time. Like, it was just like such a wonderful meeting of minds. Yeah, it's just, it's cool to trace. I think my interest, I always love like delving into kind of older fandom. This is arguably one of their oldest, like kind of modern feeling fandoms. I always love to dig into it and be like, what was the context and what was the author? Like, I think I love books the most because it's one author and just like, what were you thinking? What did you intend to do? What did you do accidentally? What did people read into this? Something very, very fun about that for me.
Ah, very cool.
So my understanding is also like people loved this character.
Yeah.
Like even when Arthur Conan Doyle was like, I'm done. They were like, no, you're not.
Incorrect.
Please write us more books about this. We need him. What do you think it is about this character that captures people so much?
Okay, I have so many theories about this. I mean,
excellent.
On the surface, he's a fun guy. The books are very funny. I think like it's easy to kind of feel like this is sort of a dry story. Like, and if you went back to the original, it would not be as rich as like if you're a fan of like the BBC show or Elementary or something. It wouldn't be as like rich and fun and relatable. I find him so fucking funny. He's very very dry. Has this very dry humor, but he's like very kind. Very eccentric and strange. And then everything is being written by his like biographer, best friend, flatmate, perhaps more, Watson, who's kind of like often being very mild about writing about Holmes's eccentricities. So there's this really fun kind of like Watson's trying to set himself up as a normal guy and he's fascinated with Holmes, who's this like crazy wild guy. So that's fun to read about. Like you read about him and he kind of takes up place in your minds in a way that has just seems like it's been happening for like 130 years.
Yeah.
But I think beyond that, so here's my like bigger theory, and it ties into like queer stories in general and queer theory. I think that Sherlock Holmes is an example of kind of a new kind of protagonist and a new kind of hero. So these books are coming out at the end of the 19th century. They're set in London, which was at the time the biggest city in the world, the biggest city that had ever existed. And the stories that you tell in an urban environment and the heroes that thrive in an urban environment are really different than the heroes in sort of like an earlier world.
Yeah.
So he's not, I mean, he does occasionally like fight and stuff. Like sometimes he boxes, walks in occasionally, brings a gun, but he really, like Holmes is really a hero of the mind. And he, not only that, he's kind of this underground figure. Like he's not really a part of mainstream society. He doesn't work for the police. Sometimes he helps the police, sometimes he doesn't help the police. Like he is not quite respectable. And there's something about that where he is this sort of underworld figure. He would be a villain in a lot of stories, but this is a story where he is the hero. And it's the problems that come to him are problems where that he gets to be the hero. And he kind of talks a lot about how he would be a criminal if he hadn't found this like line of work that like lets him do things he's interested in. And so I think there's something about that, like this shift in culture from a maybe like more rural, more agrarian society to a more urban society, and just a shift of what kind of heroes we need. And I think the detective archetype in general, like Holmes was not the first, but he was definitely like the most iconic. And I think we see that again and again of like, that is why we love detectives so much. They are this kind of urban hero who's often like also kind of coded as queer in a way that I find really interesting. So yeah, that's my kind of like meta-textual theory for why people love Sherlock Holmes. But also he's a funny, quippy guy. He does cocaine. He needs his doctor there to take care of him. And he's very smart. And he's just fun to read about.
Yeah. It's so interesting that you say that because like, as I was sort of looking into this topic, I mean, you cannot count on all of your hands the number of famous characters that are big in our zeitgeist now that are clearly modeled off the bones of Sherlock Holmes. Like Batman is a great example. Like there's no Batman without Sherlock Holmes. Like that. Yeah. It's just so interesting to see that in context.
It really feels like the introduction of an archetype.
Yeah.
Or like the most successful, like, cause I think like Dupin was an earlier detective. Like
that
there's other earlier detectives, but yes, that was Poe. But Holmes was like the most popular. And again, it kind of feels like Arthur Conan Doyle, who I don't think was queer. I don't think knew like was like super involved in that world, but I think he tapped into something that he couldn't quite control, which is also, there are all these funny stories of Doyle being like, I'm tired of writing Holmes. I've killed Holmes off. I've thrown him off a waterfall. All of London goes into mourning. People are showing up at his house. People are wearing black armbands and like going into full mourning for this fictional character.
Oh my God.
It became something bigger than Doyle could understand. And so I'm also really interested in that. Like when archetypes take on a life of their own.
That also feels so modern.
Yeah, I mean.
Like think about how many shows that you've loved that have been canceled or like, you know, they had their season ended and you're just like, no, we have to do a campaign.
Yeah.
This cannot happen. We need to know more.
Like if Kickstarter existed.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was reading, I was just reading through the stories, like, at this voracious rate, because I was so excited. I was just having so much fun with them. And I got to the midpoint, which is when Holmes dies. And I was like, I have a whole other volume. Like, it's like the first volume I had ends with him falling off the waterfall. And I was like, I have a whole other volume. It is in my house. I can go to it. I can read it. I know that there's so many more stories. And I was still like frenzied.
Like, how did you do
Where's Arthur Conan Doyle? I will find you. I will set your house on fire.
Look, which cemetery? I can go. I can travel. I've got business.
I will have words with you. He ends it in such a like, it's so great because he thinks that he's kind of killing him and instead he just does it in like the most dramatic way that everyone's like, oh, I'm in this forever now. Like, so it feels like a very Holmesian thing to have him become alive. And it's to the point where people didn't actually know that he was fictional. Like there was a lot of confusion about when the stories are being published, because they're published, it's Watson saying, I'm writing these stories. Here's sometimes Watson will be like, I don't know what happened because I wasn't there. Like it's very much in the first person. And so people really did think that like Holmes and Watson were real and they would kind of try to find the locations and be like, clearly he's obscuring things, but we have to find it. And even now there's kind of a whole branch of scholarship that's like, these stories are kind of sloppily written also because Doyle was writing a lot. He didn't really like them. He was mad at them all the time. So they're very inconsistent. And there's a whole field of scholarship that's trying to make all the inconsistencies make sense with the premise that Holmes and Watson were real and Doyle was their like literary agent.
Interesting.
So I'm so fascinated by kind of the blurring of reality and fiction that happens, especially with this story.
Yeah, because 221B, you can go there. Like, right? Was that
so?
A real...
It wasn't a real address, and now they've built a museum there, and they kind of made it an address. But yeah, and you can go, and it's on Baker Street. But yeah, it was not a real house like when it was being written.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, because I was like, I know I've been to that museum, but was it the real thing? Good to know.
Yes.
So we've talked a bit about Sherlock, but let's talk a little bit about Watson, who is, of course, he's a key part of the story. So he's not just a narrator, but he's Sherlock's like main support system, his main person. What do you think his perspective and presence adds to the stories?
Yeah, it's definitely the two of them. It's definitely that back and forth. And I think it's a very interesting example of like a kind of subtextual narrative, because Watson... He's a Victorian. He writes kind of in like a very classic like way that a lot of like Victorian like fiction is written. It's pretty sparing, especially when he talks about himself and his own feelings. A lot of times he kind of fades to the background of the scene to really like focus on describing Holmes. But you can kind of read between the lines. He's like actually this mad lad. Like he was in the army. He's been shot. He has this line where he's like, I have experience with women over three continents. And
my
so he's
Lord.
Like crazy. He gets married to a woman after meeting her like 2 days before.
Oh, so he's a lesbian.
He makes very, you know, there's theories. Like there's theories for everything. And like that is a theory that I love. but yeah, he's like, and he's obviously, when he begins the story, he's gotten home from war, he's wounded, he has no family and no friends anywhere, which is also very weird. And he is like, describes himself as being like, his nerves are shaken. And he's like, I just have to lie around all day. Like, I am not well. And so he goes to live with Sherlock Holmes, who is like, after months of like not telling him what his job is, eventually, and Watson studies him the whole time and like makes lists about like, here's what I think his job might be. And is very obsessed with his roommate. Holmes eventually tells him and takes him on a case, and they see a dead body, and there's all this excitement, and there's a guy who gets wrestled in their like apartment, and it's all this stuff that Watson said he didn't want, all this adrenaline and like shouting and arguments and drama, and he is addicted and hooked, and he never turns away from it again. And so there's this really funny thing of him saying, I don't want excitement, I want a simple life, and then being like, but I am going to follow Sherlock Holmes everywhere the rest of
But are you on a murder case, you say?
But I thirst for the drama.
Exactly. Yeah, it's really fun. And he'll sometimes kind of have these little moral moments where he tries to like represent more like upstanding society. Holmes will be like, we have to break into this person's house to get the evidence. And Watson's like, we can't do a crime. And Holmes is like, I'm going to do the crime. And Watson's like, okay, I'm coming with you, obviously. He made us mad. that is very literally.
Oh my God. That's also a classic dynamic, you know?
It's so fun. It's such a fun, like, back and forth. And he's so obsessed with Holmes in the way he writes about him. He uses all this, like, really beautiful language to describe, like, his physicality and his gaze and his hands. There's just... It's written in like this very like beautifully romantic style that I think like if you're looking for like an embedded queer narrative, which I always am, it was like really, really rewarding to read it and find that.
Well, you know, we all write about our coworkers' hands. You know, it's very that's very heterosexual.
Roommates no less.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Oh God, there's a part where he like describes Holmes as being like supple, and I sent it to my friend and I was like, just a quick check. Do we use this word for our friends?
I don't think supple. Even in the Victorian era they used supple that liberally.
Well, dude, okay. So part of this has been me like also doing this parallel deep dive into like real world queer Victorian culture, because I was like, I want to know, like, am I just reading into this with my 21st century shipping lens?
What's
which
the
of
context?
Course I am, but I want to know the context. And there is so many references. There's so many, like, Holmes reads these books by queer authors, and there's these words that Watson uses all the time, like laconic or languid or earnest for Holmes, which were all code words for queer at the time. And it's just really interesting to kind of get that context and like be like, okay, so the meaning of that word has changed slightly. What was the closest thing that it meant at this time? Like, what did you mean when you described him as languid? And then to kind of find all of this other literature about how languid was like really a term for gay men. It's just very interesting. It's another little string on my murder wall.
Yeah. Well, also, how do you write about, how do you write a character inspired by Oscar Wilde and make him straight? Like, it's just, it's impossible. That is one of the gayest men of history.
Yes. The classic gay, I would say. And it's
the classic gay.
I find it
the platonic ideal.
like, did Doyle know? Was Doyle doing it on purpose? I do not know, and I do not need to, like, prove it. Like, a Holmes is, like, more, he became his own thing. But it's,
I mean, there's plenty of evidence of lots of writers who didn't intend to write in homoerotic or, like, queer-coded characters who are like, well, that's what it is now. So, you know, it's very possible.
And it's funny. I mean, I think as a writer, I have definitely experienced that, like, characters kind of taking on a life of their own and sort of dictating what they are going to do and what they're going to, where they just show up and you're like, this makes sense and I don't know why. And I think I'm probably referencing people that I know and kind of building a composite out of like experiences I've had. But yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting how that happens. I can really see it happening.
Yeah.
Of kind of Doyle being like, I'm going to write this character who's kind of a composite of all these like interesting intellectual men that I know who are kind of like outside the norm and just, he was in London in the late 1800s. It was full of gay. That was like the description for gay men at the time.
Oh, fascinating. Yeah. And they have a real love for each other, right? Watson and Holmes. Like it's a very deep and very loyal relationship, right?
Yeah, I think that's the other magic of it is kind of you read about this character. You know, I don't think the reader really imagines himself as Holmes. We go through the adventure, usually in the stories, Holmes kind of knows what's happening, but he doesn't tell Watson, he doesn't tell the reader. And so it's all kind of like, you're carried along. And then at the end, he explains everything. So he's very much not the point of view character. He's not the relatable character. The fantasy is, what if this really cool guy really liked you and you were his favorite guy in the whole world? And he wanted to go everywhere with you. And anytime someone like wants him to go on an adventure, he's like, we have to bring my close friend and intimate companion back to that. Every time. It's so cute.
Oh, that's so, I want to have a little side friend that I bring around. I'm the side friend. I'm not the show.
I'll be your side friend.
We're each other's side friends. Yeah. Neither of us is a main character here.
Marriage is being each other's side friends. Yeah.
It's great. Solving mysteries, you know. Character.
Yeah. Yeah. It's this really sweet, and it definitely, you know, it goes to really, there's some really beautiful, like, lines. You can kind of trace the like evolution of their relationship of this kind of hero worship to something more comfortable, and then this like really, really deep love of any kind, really. Like, it could be any kind of love, but it is so beautifully described. There's like a few different like scenes that I think are kind of famous in the fandom of like, there's a scene where Watson gets shot and Holmes is like freaking out, and Watson is like, oh, he loves me. Like, I've never realized it before, but he loves me.
Aww.
Just like some really, there's just like a lot of like really, really beautiful moments, but almost more than that, it's this simple casual intimacy of them living together and sharing things and kind of being each other, their dressing gowns and like sitting and talking and just this kind of, it feels very married in a way that is so, just so lovely. And so like kind of really, really lovely and interesting to read from that time period.
From your understanding with that time period, was that type of a relationship commonplace, or was it definitely like, would many men have these like close intimate friendships at the time,
like a queer relationship,
or even just in general, like would people see that sort of dynamic and relationship in Victorian London and be like, well, those two guys seem like best friends, I guess?
Okay, well, it's really interesting. It's hard, you know, it's so hard to find out this stuff because it is
the stuff they don't
so
write
often
about.
The description, yeah, letters are destroyed. Like, literally the men of this time period had, they would have a pact of like, if I'm dying, my friend is going to come over and burn all my letters. Like, this idea of just like, we have to destroy our history because we're trying to make names for ourselves. We're trying to be like known as intellectuals or artists. And we cannot have these like compromising letters and evidence of our relationships. So it's really hard to find that information. What I think is interesting is that in the earlier Victorian era, it was a little more, like perhaps not considered normal, but it was sort of a bit more accepted. And there was this idea that queerness was sort of an individual thing, almost like an action that you take. Like it's was maybe considered a crime by some people, maybe considered a sin, but it was also kind of just like, yeah, that's something that somebody did. As time went on and as the culture shifted towards a more like scientific understanding of the world, and again, this is like very specifically like England's culture, it became more pathologized. And so I think there was a really flourishing culture of queer intellectuals. They're called the aesthetes in London in like the 1880s. And I think in 1885, a law was passed called the La Boucher Amendment that made it a lot easier to prosecute homosexuality between men. And it made it just like, you could have like very, very little evidence and then you could prosecute these men. They would go to jail for 2 years. That's what happened 10 years later to Oscar Wilde. And so there was this very specific moment in time that things went from being like, we are having this kind of flourishing community, to then it is suddenly illegal in a much more textual way than it was before. There is a very specific law on the books and people are being prosecuted in this very specific way. So how this ties in with Sherlock Holmes is really interesting. Thank you for letting me info dump.
I'm so excited. This is great.
It's Info Dump the podcast.
Yeah,
so.
This is what this is.
So the timing of this is really interesting. There's two things. One is that that amendment was known colloquially as the blackmailer's law, because it basically, blackmailing became incredibly common. That was how Wilde was like sent to trial. People would get a hold of like an indiscreet letter that you'd written to a friend or a lover and then blackmail you with it because it was so easy to like, you didn't, I think before it was like, you basically had to like catch people in the act. And now after the law, you could just have a letter. There is one of my favorite Holmes stories is The Adventure of Charles Augustus Milverton, which is about a blackmailer. And it's a really fun, Holmes hates this man more than Moriarty, more than anybody, like more than any of his villains. He despises him, describes him as a snake. He is like, Watson, this is the worst man in London. And they have to kind of go and like get some woman's letters, although we never meet the woman. So it's kind of like, maybe those were Holmes's letters, who knows? And they break into his house. It's the first time they commit a crime. And it's just a really interesting, like the level of venom that is saved for this blackmailer when this was such a specific, like blackmailing was so specifically a way to take down queer men at the time. So that's one thing. Thing number two, Oscar Wilde's trial was in 1895. This was 10 years after the law was passed, and this was kind of the most publicized trial. It was really, really famous. It was Wilde kind of trying to prove his like, prove that he had like not had relations with Lord Alfred Douglas, who was like a younger man. He was basically doing it to preserve Douglas's reputation. And he was convicted and sent to jail. And it's really, really tragic. It's like, it's one of the like great, I feel, queer tragic stories. At that time that the trial was happening, everybody's eyes were kind of opened, like polite society's eyes were opened to like homosexual London's undergrounds. Wilde was talking, like they sort of were learning about these parties and these like sex workers and just kind of the entire culture of it and things that people in polite society had never heard about before. And what the gay men and queer men of London did is that they all left. They went to the country, they went to France, where it was legal to be queer. They got out of town because it was a bad time to be queer in London. And so when we look at the Sherlock Holmes stories that are set in the year 1895, they all take place outside of London. And there's one story in particular where Holmes is like, Watson is like, we had to leave London. I'm not going to say why.
What?
And so that I just think is really fun.
I feel like you're Sherlock Holmesing Sherlock Holmes.
You are.
This is also part of the appeal, is that it makes you start thinking like this.
Yeah.
And then you're like, I'm going insane because I don't have the brain power of Sherlock Holmes. But, I find that those historical parallels are like so interesting to me. Because I'm like, why? Because a bunch of the stories don't say the year. And it's this one story where Watson is like, it's 1895, it's in the spring, and we have to leave London. I will not say why. And it's just like such an interesting detail to include.
If he's not trying to do it, like if he's not writing Holmes as a canonically queer character, that is such an interesting little detail to put in there for readers. Just be like, it's fine. Don't worry about it. It doesn't matter.
But also so interesting.
And Doyle would have known he was friends with Wilde. Like he would have known about, he would have definitely been following Wilde's trial. I'm not sure what his reaction was to it, but like it's things like that, that like, again, I don't need like authorial intent to like confirm this for me or not, but it is like really fun to just to dig in, and it adds to this feeling of verisimilitude where it's, you're like, maybe these were real people. Like what, like, who knows?
Oh, it's fun. Oh, that must've been so satisfying when you like put that together.
Yeah, I'm definitely not the first person to draw that conclusion. Although I do think I did it independently, and then I like Googled it, and I was like, okay, everybody has gotten to this. But
even more satisfying.
This is very satisfying. So just in the canon of Sherlock, we've got 56 stories, 4 novels. Do you have a favorite mystery, and do you have a favorite story for Holmes and Watson specifically?
Oh, that's a good question. I think there's a lot of good ones. I think that Hound of the Baskervilles is a classic for a reason.
Yeah.
It's one of the novels, and the mystery is really fun. It's a novel, so it gets to be a little longer, and it plays out, and it has all these really fun supporting characters. It's set in a spooky gothic mansion. There's a like possibly undead dog. There's moors. There's like a beautiful kind of like, the moor is this really interesting setting that is like very eerie. So I think that is like one of the best mysteries, and like all of them are really good Holmes and Watson stories. They all have like gems in them. I think one of my favorites is when they're a little older and they're always like taking trips for Holmes's health because he, this is another thing that makes him appealing. He works too hard and then he burns out and he needs to be taken care of like a baby bird, which is very fun.
Very
like such a like you like combining like the alchemical like contents to make a really appealing character. And it's like he burns out and like needs to be held. So they go up to the north, wild north on the coast. And as always happens when they take these trips, there is a mysterious murder, and Watson is like, Holmes, you will not do the murder. And Holmes is like, I would like to do the murder, please. so this one is called The Adventure of the Devil's Foot. And Holmes deduces that these people have been found dead, no marks on them, but like looks of extreme horror on their faces. And they died from fright. And like, oh my God, what could it have been? And everybody's like, it's supernatural. It's a devil. It's like a ghost. Holmes is like, I do not believe in ghosts. Unlike Arthur Conan Doyle, I am a rationalist. And so he realizes that there's been this like substance that's been burned, like a drug that has given everyone horrible hallucinations. And so because he's a genius, he's like, Watson, we are going to do the drug. And so he and Watson do the drug together it's like you burn it. And so they do it in a room and then like start having the most horrible hallucinations. And Watson has to rescue Holmes and pull him out onto the grass and like save him. And then Holmes is like, I am so sorry I did that. And Watson is like, I will do anything for you. And it's just a really beautiful moment. And I love it, especially because they're just older and there's just something about like, I don't know, old guys like doing drugs and like confessing up to each other.
Just two old guys tripping balls, you know?
It just like scratches something in my head that like I really, really like. I'm like, you are so like, you made a really, that was really dumb of you.
Well, that's their choice to do it too. Like if someone was like, okay, so all these people are dying, we think it might be because of this drug has something to do with it, and they're like, yep, put some of that inside of me.
Yeah,
no way.
Not even a designated driver, you know?
Absolutely not.
No, I know. And Holmes is like, Watson, do you want to wait outside? And Watson is like, absolutely not.
I want to meet you on your level, man.
I will meet you on your level. I have so many favorites, but like that is, yeah, I just like that one because it's just, it's, and it's also, it's interesting, like Holmes like has this like arc of struggling with cocaine or like abusing cocaine. And then at a certain point, Watson alludes to like, oh, I weaned him off of cocaine without, I'm like, tell me more, please. But so it's like them doing a substance together is also very interesting because like in my little delusional little brain, I'm like, okay, Holmes has like been weaned off cocaine, but now he like has to do this. And Watson is like, I have to protect you. I don't know.
Just like, I understand you have to do this for your work, but I'm here with you. I'm on this journey with you. I will not let you go alone.
They have the worst trip. Yes.
Oh, is there anything more couple than having to go through a terrible, terrible trip?
Yes, lots of things. Lots of things.
So many things.
What are you doing?
So many things.
Watson just like giving him orange juice.
Like, it's okay. Just sleep it off. Just sleep it off. It's fine.
Do you find yourself getting really into the mysteries? Because I know we are rewatching Veronica Mars right now, and I'm in a real mystery mode. Do you find the same thing happening with you reading Sherlock? Are you like getting really into the solving?
Yeah, I am a bit. I'm definitely more in it for the characters bouncing off each other, the mystery as a structure. But it is, it's really fun how they evolve. And what I like most about them is that they, again, like this time period, they are like very much mysteries of their own time period. So a lot of times you have to kind of look up, like they'll be like, oh, the smoke guard was like burned in a certain way. And you're like, what is a smoke guard? I need to go learn about this. So there's all these like very minute details that really, really place you in that time and place. And so I enjoy that a lot. And it's always just fun. They just meet so many like fun characters. I'm kind of doing this little series of illustrations where I draw little, like my favorite moments from each story and kind of just like really digging into it and being like, gosh, these are so like funny and fun. Like all the characters they meet are very eccentric and they just like do really interesting things in the course of the investigation. It's cool. Occasionally there's some pretty silly coincidences, but like, I think we accept that in the mystery genre.
Oh yeah, of course. It's critical.
Yes. Yeah.
So talking about the side characters, we've got like Mycroft, we've got Irene Adler, we've got Moriarty. Are any of them like, which of them are your favorites? Which interests you the most?
Yeah, it's funny because like most of them only appear in one. Like Irene Adler is only in one story. Watson never meets Moriarty, which I have a personal theory that Holmes made up Moriarty. That's like as a way to, because Watson is married at that time. And Holmes is like, I got to get out of this.
Holmes is like, I also have a guy. Don't worry about it. I got someone I'm going to see.
Sure, he's my, dark shadow, but don't worry about it.
Yeah. Yeah, that is my theory. Irene Adler is really fun. She dresses as a boy when she needs to, like, go out and walk around on the streets, which I feel like you never see in adaptations. And so I have this very, like, cool genderqueer Irene Adler in my head. There's a cool girl. There's five different girls named Violet. So I always confuse them. I don't know why. Five characters named Violet. Arthur Conan Doyle, like, I cannot stress this enough, did not care about these stories.
Or there's so many names you could pick.
I like the idea that Violet is like the Jennifer of the time. There was like, just a time where everyone was
like
Violet.
There's like six Violets in my class. Don't worry about it. Violet M, about.
It's a nice name. but there's a girl who's being, she's like, a nurse or something. And she's being stalked by someone she's like biking. And then someone is following her on a bike. And she like gets so mad at them that she just like turns around and starts biking towards them really fast. And she's like, there's a lot of like very cool women who kind of are like this problem is happening and I am pissed off about it.
I'm dealing with it myself. I'm addressing it.
Yeah.
I'm addressing it.
Look, I'm addressing it. So there's also been, obviously, we've talked a bit about adaptations, but of the most, we've got Jeremy Brett, which people talk about, Robert Downey Jr., Benedict Cumberbatch. Is there one that you think that you've seen so far that kind of gets the closest or gets it right for you?
Or one that the fandom kind of accepts as an official?
Yeah, I think that's the Jeremy Brett series, which is a Granada Studios, I think is what it's called. I believe it was like on the BBC in the 80s and 90s. And so that has J. Jeremy Brett. Interestingly, it has two different Watsons. It has one Watson, huh, and then he has to leave, and there's a second Watson. So you kind of get these two different like flavors of that character because they're quite different. But Brett is just this incredible actor who really embodies the character like so perfectly. So I definitely watch it and really feel like it is the closest to the canon. It is the closest to the stories. And again, this kind of archetype that is like bigger than its creator feels like very present in that adaptation. Also, Jeremy, to keep it on my queer agenda, Jeremy Brett was bisexual.
Yeah. And so I feel
like he brings this like, cool, yeah, he brings this really fun like camp to the character that I think is like completely canonical, but it's like, it's so much just in his like gestures and his performances and the way like his interactions with Watson. In the books, Watson like married, sometimes he's like married and not living at Baker Street. Sometimes he's living at Baker Street. And in the show, he's just like always living at Baker Street. So it has this really sweet, like married couple feel to it. Yeah, that those ones are just, ooh, they're so good. And kind of, I also love like a kind of low budget 80s show. There's something very like fun to me about like a cheesy soundstage or like bad lighting. So I enjoy that for that purpose as well.
When you're doing your sort of illustrated versions of these stories, like what do you kind of have as a reference in your head? Like, were there original illustrations with the stories when they were published? Like, what do you work from visually?
Yeah, there were some classic, like Sidney Paget, I don't know how to say his name, was one of the like classic illustrators who did all of the first stories like in their first publication. So he kind of like defined the look.
Cool.
I just sort of sat down to figure it out. I did some sketches to kind of figure out what my version of the characters is, which is not like particularly groundbreaking in any way, but it just was sort of me finding the shapes that worked for me to draw like over and over again. So that was kind of, it's always sort of fun to, there have been so many adaptations that I didn't feel like bound to any one
thing,
or I didn't feel like any one thing was really stuck in my head. I was like, I can kind of like find these characters on my own.
Yeah. It must be so interesting to have like such a, they're so recognizable. Like you can kind of pick Sherlock and Watson out of a lineup if you were to keep casting them over and over again, but they do have sort of different variants, which is interesting.
Yeah. 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 Which is also, I enjoy the Downey films because I think they like, Watson is like in the books is kind of like young and hot and cool.
Yeah.
And so casting Jude Law as Watson is like really fun. I think most adaptations are like, okay, Watson is like kind of like older and like round and like he's just sort of like a fuddy-duddy.
Yeah.
And it's like, it was like, it's like a fun choice to kind of be like, actually in the text, Watson is like kind of an action hero. But to like have that character, that kind of character still be seconds and be like, I am the sidekick though, and I recognize that I am like not, I am like always like being outwitted by Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. I mean, Jude Law is a guy who probably knows women on three different continents. You know? I buy that.
I buy it.
Those films are so, so gay. Like I truly, truly can, like I cannot, if I talk about it, it will sound like I'm exaggerating and I'm not. Like, I beg you to watch them again.
Well, we've already talked about it. We're like, oh, do we watch this before or after?
I think I remember Downey Jr. going on record to say he played it a little bit that way on purpose. But I might
they be. Both ha- yeah, they both have? Okay. They both were like, yes.
Yeah,
there's a great Jude Law quote where an interviewer is like, so tell me about the like bromance of the films. And he's like, it's a romance.
Bless.
Why are you calling it a romance?
Yeah. Yes. Bless these boys.
Yeah. Delightful.
If you had to fan cast an adaptation, who would you pick in those two roles? Sherlock and
and
Watson.
Oh, I wish you'd like given me like, time to think about it.
You know what? If we want to sit on that, we can come back around.
We sit on it.
Okay.
Because someone will
I'll say this is I'm stealing this from someone on Tumblr.
We love.
But it was Dev Patel as Holmes and Riz Ahmed as Watson.
Oh,
and
totally.
That one got me. That one really got me. Because Dev Patel has that kind of brooding, like he like has like a dark side. And I would love to see him play kind of manic. And then like Riz Ahmed is like very, I feel like he could do very good, like I am proper. I am trying so hard to be proper.
Oh, I want to see that so much.
That's
So I, again, stolen from someone on Tumblr who did beautiful fan art for it.
Bless you, Tumblr.
We will be looking this up after. Do not worry.
I'll send you the link if you want to link
Please,
it
yes.
Okay, yes. Yeah, because I love to give credit, yeah.
Absolutely. What's the nerdiest thing you've done in relation to this fandom so far?
I mean, like I've been telling you a lot of those things. I have a secret Tumblr.
A secret Tumblr.
Excellent.
Oh. It's not that secret. I mean, it's very easy to find, but I just don't say that. I don't say that it's me on there. Yeah. I did make a Tumblr to post fan art and like thoughts because I was at a, okay, this is probably pretty embarrassing. So my spouse and I go to this really great music festival called Girls Just Want a Weekend. It's by Brandi Carlile.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We basically call it Lesbian Coachella. It's like, oh, it's like lesbian folk singers. It's so good. It's such a, you like just party and you're on the beach and you're just listening to music. It's so, so good. We went there in January and someone was playing a cover of Creep. And I was like, all I can do is like go on Tumblr and be like, Creep is a Dr. Watson song. I was like, why am I thinking about this here? Why is this like
incredible?
I am in the most wonderful place. And yes.
To be at a beach party and be like, I simply must to Tumblr.
I must go. They must know. They need to know about it. Everybody was like, what are you talking about?
Like, I need this information out in the world. It's very important.
Fandom, I thought it would do numbers. It did not. Nobody cared. Nobody agreed.
But sometimes you get that worm in your brain and you're just like, I can't, I can't unthink it. I've had them too. We all have, you know?
Yeah.
That's beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing that.
Of course.
We're about to get into the hot takes, but before we do, this episode is brought to you by teepublic.com, where you're going to find your next favorite t-shirt. They have unique and nerdy designs. You can get on t-shirts, tank tops, hoodies, mugs, stickers, phone cases, you name it, you could probably get a thing on it. You can find a design that you love and get it on almost anything. You can also customize the color, fabric on any piece of clothing. Obviously the size. Why wouldn't you be able to customize that? Well, you can, so you don't have to worry about it.
The best part of it is that all of the designs are made by indie artists and they get a fair commission for their work. So you can look through all of this incredible art, and there's some like incredibly creative stuff on the site. Like a lot of it is fandom based. A lot of it is like original. It's really, really amazing stuff. So you can go through there, find something that you like. And when you buy it from our TeePublic store or anywhere on TeePublic, you are supporting an indie artist. But when you buy it from our store, you're also supporting this podcast, which is awesome. So head on over to teepublic.thefandomshow.com to check out all of our merch and favorite designs from TeePublic. That's teepublic.thefandomshow.com. And thank you so much, TeePublic, for your support.
Okay, we're getting into hot takes. I'm going to start real spicy. Overall, Agatha Christie is a better author than Arthur Conan Doyle, but Sherlock Holmes is a better character than Poirot.
I have not read Agatha Christie yet, so I cannot speak to it.
That's fair.
I'm open to her being a better author. I think that is like probably pretty likely.
Look, we'll put a pin in it, and then when you go on your Agatha Christie deep dive eventually, then we'll come back
and do
another episode.
Yeah. It does sound
fun. It is on my desk. I really have such a long reading list. Like,
oh yeah.
And I'm sure just once you start getting down a path, you're like, oh, and then I could read this, and I could read this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Though from the sounds of the way that he's written in general, it sounds like it's not necessarily the tightest. So maybe this is true. Maybe it's not. I've not read either.
There's a part where there's a story where Watson, like Holmes is supposed to be dead for 2 years. And there's like a whole adventure that Watson writes in that time period where he's like, Holmes and I are going on an adventure. Like, no, you weren't, baby girl.
It's fanfic. It's great. Oh, that's very funny. Okay, cool. How about this one? Sherlock was always helping people that no one else in his time would. Women, addicts, drunks. He was a fundamentally good and kind person, and some other adaptations of Sherlock just depict him as a dick who was mean to everybody and just in it for the mystery.
That is so real. Yes. That I feel like that's very, very accurate. It's so interesting. I mean, I think I think a lot of people read him as autistic. He is like definitely acerbic. He can be, when people are patronizing to him, he like takes them apart in the most brutal manner. Like he is like, you do not want to be his enemy, but he is genuinely very, very kind and very empathetic, but he like exhibits it in an unusual way that not everybody picks up on. Yeah, I think it's you see it a lot in adaptations where he's kind of just mean for meanness's sake, or kind of mean to be like, just like prove his superiority. And in my reading of the character, there is this kind of loneliness where he really wants to be sharing these things. Yeah. And he opens up the most and is the most proud and the most chatty and the most like emotional when he can kind of share his passion, like his special interest, which is solving mysteries. And then he just gets really bored otherwise and is like not a good person when he's bored, which I think is very relatable. So yeah, I think he's definitely not like I kind of do love him because he's not like a soft character. He's not like super, like he's like very mean to Watson sometimes in a way that I find like delightful and kind of spicy. But yeah, it's very one note to just like sort of portray him as like a like snobbish asshole.
Just like a computer on legs.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's, yeah. And Watson describes him as like a reasoning machine and things like that. And then it's this funny dichotomy of like Watson would be like, he's a brain with no heart. And then later he's like, Holmes gets complimented and he blushes, or like Holmes, like Watson is injured and Holmes is like, I'm going to kill the person who hurt you. Like, I mean, so you see these, he communicates his like feelings in a very like unusual way, but he does have them.
Oh yeah. Interesting.
Which, yeah, I think is another reason that people, I think like neurodivergent people like really, really relate to him. There's just like something very real about the way that he seems like he is wants to share himself, but can never quite figure out how. And Watson is kind of the person who can translate him for the rest of the world.
Yeah.
Because on a similar note, I'm going to muddle up one of the hot takes here. But, you know, we're talking about how Sherlock is by nature. He's a pretty likable guy who, like, chooses to put on a facade for self-preservation. Whereas John Watson, when left to his own devices, is grumpy, awkward, and antisocial. Is there
that
hot
is
take?
True. Yeah. Oh, that is just deeply accurate. No, he's such a bitch, especially in the beginning. When he just, before he like discovers his calling to just write about his best friend all day, he's so grumpy and like snippy and just lies around all day. And it's fun. It's interesting seeing what they bring out in each other.
They both need a project, you know?
They both really need a project. Yeah.
Yeah, Idle Hands, the devil's playground, you know?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So this is sort of an interesting, to add to this, Sherlock suffers from toxic masculinity. He's exasperated by others' stupidity, feels that emotions are obstacles to a balanced mind, and is disparaging and domineering. His intelligence is understood through his toxic masculinity and even presented as sexy. Thoughts?
That's interesting. Like, I think that's a valid, like, I would, it's like not how I, it doesn't bump me in that way.
Yeah.
But I think that is a valid reading. I'm trying to think of like if I have anything smart to say about that.
It can also just be a yes or a no.
Okay. I didn't know there was supposed to be a yes or no answer.
No. Not supposed to be. That's just an option for you.
I think what prevents it for me is that he feels so much like an outsider to the society that he's in. Whereas like I read toxic masculinity as being somebody who like is wielding the force of their privilege and status.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's like the definition, or I also read it as somebody who is maybe angry that they're not being afforded the privilege and status they think they deserve.
Yeah.
Whereas Holmes is like very much this independent operator. A lot of his like disdain, quote unquote, for emotions is him not thinking that he would get involved with anything like that, because he sort of sees the problems and deals with it. He observes life, but he does not partake in it.
Right.
So that's kind of more of how I read him, which to me, I read much more as like a queer person at a time when like being open was dangerous, kind of choosing to like set yourself back from the world and just be an observer, which is again why we want the intimacy of like, what does he do for breakfast? Like, we want to sort of like see him through Watson's eyes, because that intimacy kind of like we get to see something that nobody else gets to see. So that is my hot take. But I mean, I will say these books are written in the Victorian era by like a white man in England. Like, it's like, I'm not going to like wave the flag and say it's like super progressive. It is like absolutely a product of its time. And he is like very misogynistic at times in a way that's kind of like, what are you even doing? Like, you are so scared of women.
Well, speaking of women, I'm going to do a little side switch to Irene Adler. So this one is about Irene Adler's transition from badass and brilliant in A Scandal in Bohemia, which was utterly betrayed in the adaptation, where they turn her into a trope of lesbian who needed the right man to turn her.
What adaptation is that?
This is in Sherlock. Apparently she is a dominatrix for rich people, and she's a lesbian until he looks in her eyes and discovers that he knows she's in love with him.
I appreciate that information. I haven't watched it, and my spouse keeps threatening me that we're going to watch it, and I'm like, I don't know if I'm ready. I don't know if I'm ready. I appreciate that. Content warning.
Yeah, that'll probably be very annoying to watch.
She's so fun. She's so fun in the story because she's so smart. It's like Holmes is hired by this, like, the king of Scandinavia or something. It's not Scandinavia, it's something else. But the king, he's like, she has a photo, like a compromising photo of us, and I have to get it back. And Holmes immediately is like, this woman is so much cooler than you. I'm obsessed with her. To me, it feels again very much like the way that gay men are obsessed with like brilliant women. In that he is like, and she outwits him. Like she tricks him. She's the only other person kind of besides Moriarty who tricks him. I always kind of read Holmes's like distrust of women as him knowing that women are very smart and like being like, I can predict what men are going to do a little bit more easily. And like women, I'm like not quite as good at that. And so I'm like a little bit more mistrustful. That's kind of how I always read it.
I love that.
But yeah, she's fucking great. And I would love an adaptation. I think like the Jeremy Brett one is pretty good. It's the pilot episode. But I would love an adaptation where it's like, it doesn't try to make it a romance. Cause it just is like, there's not a shred of that in the book. It really is just like Holmes has met his match and this brilliant cross-dressing woman who like does whatever she wants and like is having off having her own romance also in the story. She's fun. She's a fun character. Oh. Justice for Irene.
I would say I shortened this. There's a lot more to why the BBC adaptation isn't great. So maybe skip that episode.
That's the end of the take?
No. Oh, I took things out of the take because it was, they didn't, it
sounds like
it didn't give her justice.
Yeah, there were a number of takes on the Sherlock adaptation.
We left most of them out.
Perhaps that's a different episode.
All right.
I cannot speak to it. Yeah. No opinion. Yeah. Nothing. I will say Benedict Cumberbatch's face scares a part of my brain, like the lizard brain part of me. I cannot. He's really scary.
It's just, I think I see it. Yeah. I think it's just, you know where features typically land on a face. I think our eyes are like, this is where I would typically place these features. And his are just in slightly different places, which is like, okay, that's fine.
He
that's your face.
I feel like I'm looking at AI.
Yes.
And I'm like, it's not human, but he's just a man.
He can't hurt you.
It's just something in my brain that is like, that is an enemy.
Yep, there's something Uncanny Valley going.
Look, I'm just going to throw this out there. His name also very much sounds like an AI generated it.
Yeah.
Are just like a British name.
This is a real man.
Go.
Just saying. All right, this one is back to Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. Sir Conan Doyle being a spiritualist makes his character being so hard and clear-headed fascinating. Sherlock Holmes espoused ideals of critical thinking skills and logic, but if you read a lot of Holmes's stories, Doyle didn't particularly understand how scientific thinking works.
Yes.
Why did he pick this character that's so detail-oriented and like scientifically motivated?
Sometimes the character picks you.
Exactly. It was this like archetype that like needed to be born at this time, and like Doyle was the vessel. Like it's so interesting. Yeah, Doyle felt like he believed in fairies. He felt
really
victim to those. I think they're called like the Cottingham or Cottingswald fairies. It's these photographs that some preteen girls made of like cutout fairies, and they like posed with them. And then they presented them as proof that fairies were real, and Doyle fell for it.
Oh my god.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my god, bless.
To write the most brilliant detective and be like, but also fairies. Love them.
I love it. So, there's something so funny about it to me, which I think is why there's so many theories about like, oh, like Doyle was the literary agent, because people are just like, how did this character come from this man?
It doesn't make it make sense.
Yeah.
That is so funny. Okay. What is, I mean, I feel like we know the broad sense of this, but what is your hot take on Sherlock Holmes?
I hate the Dear Soccer hat.
Okay. That is a hot take. I love that you're like, no, the gay stuff is just a take.
Yeah, that's just
that's
real.
That's regular take.
Yeah, that's not, I mean, yeah.
That's not a hot take.
Talked about that enough. I really don't like the Dear Soccer hat. I feel like they, he sort of had this like went from Britain to England or Britain to America. And then in a bunch of film adaptations, they were trying to make him more like masculine, which like proves something about the original text. Yeah. So I feel like the like hunting cap is part of it. Like, I don't know. I give him a top hat or nothing.
Ooh. Nice.
It does feel like the right look for him.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
All right, at the end of every episode, we like to share our micro fandoms of the week, which we're going to do in just a moment. But before we do, here are some other ways you can connect with us. Find us on social media at Fandom Show Pod or on our website at thefandomshow.com. Please tell your buds about us if you're enjoying the podcast. And if you can, get on your podcast provider of choice, though primarily and principally Apple Podcasts is helpful, and do a little rate, review, and subscribe. Even a one-sentence review or a one-word review helps us to move up in the charts and means we can reach more people with our love of fandom. Put down in there if there's a specific Sherlock actor that you really like. Put that as your comment. That's all we need. So head on over there and give us a little rate.
We also have merch. So if you would like to get our faces on things like shirts or mugs or, I don't know, more, you can head on over to thefandomshow.tpublic.com. You can also find us on the From Superheroes Discord where you can meet other fans or you can hit us up directly. And our theme song is by Yusu Kim and our logo is by John Blair.
So Kaya.
Yeah.
We're down in the micro fandoms of the week.
Yeah.
What are you fanning out about?
Okay, so I am reading a book that many people have likely heard of called The Body Keeps the Score. It is a
really cheerful book.
Yeah, it's not cheerful. It is about how like trauma affects the body. But if you are interested in psychology, it is a fascinating book. It's like a very much a really important text on the subject of trauma and what it does to us. But like if you are even just interested in how our bodies work with in accordance with our brains, it is such an amazing read, and it's really well written as well. So it's like even for somebody who doesn't have a science background and is just casually
Sir
interested.
Arthur Conan Doyle.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly.
Into it.
That's right. Exactly. It is a really good read. Obviously, some trigger warnings. It does talk about trauma and some terrible things that have happened to quite a lot of people, but it does so very like cautiously, and it is very very interesting and worth reading if that's a subject that you are interested in pursuing. Steph, what are you fanning out about this week?
This, I've brought this up probably many times. I don't know if I've brought up this specific version, but right now we've got the Jeopardy Tournament of Champions. I love Jeopardy so much, and this tournament has been mind-blowing. The people on the show are so smart. First of all, Ike Barinholtz showed up because he won Celebrity Jeopardy, and they put him on this, and that mofo is smart. He is. I was so impressed. Like, I jumped up and cheered when he won his episode.
You were
because
very
I was
excited.
Just like, people think actors are stupid, and they're not stupid. They're very smart. And so to see him succeed, it was very lovely. We've also seen a few episodes where they've answered every single question correctly, which is wild.
I didn't even realize a perfect game of Jeopardy was a thing that could exist until he said that it was.
It's honestly, you're seeing the best of the best. And Jeopardy is always a fun time. I can't answer 90% of the questions on Tournament of Champions, but that's okay because hopefully I'll absorb some information. So next time they ask me about operas, I'll answer Rigoletto for sure. but yeah, it's great. You can find episodes probably on the internet, but it's just what a joy.
Yeah.
Molly, what are you nerding out about?
Okay, this week I've been reading the Jeeves series by P.G. Wodehouse. I'm going to be on a panel with Ngozi, the cartoonist, couple weeks. And she's like a really big fan of these books. And it's like, they're from like the 1920s and 1930s. And it's about very silly, young, like British nobleman and then his like hyper-competent butler, Jeeves. and they're really funny. It's like my bedtime book, so I always just like read a little bit before I fall asleep, but they're like laugh out loud funny, just like so goofy. So it's following along with my theme of like reading things by authors who are dead because they can't disappoint me on Twitter.
Is this the Jeeves that is of Ask Jeeves fame and like the quintessential Jeeves?
The Jeeves.
Yeah. Cool.
He's kind of the other. I feel like he's a very, they're another very archetypal duo. It's Wooster and Jeeves. Wooster is like ridiculous. He's always getting into situations. He's always like getting engaged to ladies and like having to steal things from like his great aunt. And then Jeeves is like, I will fix everything for you, but you cannot get married. You have to live with me forever. It's very cute. So I'm excited. I'm like queuing up because I'm like, I like have a panel with Ngozi and I want to talk to her about it.
Oh, yes. That's so awesome. Oh, that's very cool. Also reading books by dead authors because they can't disappoint you on Twitter is the advice I didn't know I needed, but here we are.
Like as an alive author, I like shouldn't be saying that, but I just
no. Also,
I just
support live authors. We also love that.
Yes,
but very funny nonetheless.
I read a lot.
Molly, thank you so much for being here and chatting with us. Where can people find you? Is there anything you want to plug?
Thank you, guys. My website is mollyostertag.com. I'm on Instagram at molly_ostertag, and I have a newsletter. That's ostertag.substack.com. And I have a book coming out really soon. It's a graphic novel, a young adult graphic novel called The Deep Dark, coming out June 4th. It will be in bookstores everywhere. You can pre-order it as well. And it's kind of a little bit of a mystery of its own. It's a dark story about having secrets and childhood friendships and kind of the things that we keep to ourselves and how those can be really damaging. It's fun. I'm proud of it. I'm very excited for it to come out. So The Deep Dark, that's in stores June 4th.
That's amazing. So exciting. If you haven't checked out any of Molly's work yet, get on it.
Yeah.
Get those books because honestly, everything I've read by you has been incredible.
Yep, can confirm.
Good. Which book? Great.
And let me say, if you too enjoy my takes on Sherlock Holmes, I am putting like a ton of art on my Substack right now. So that's ostertag.substack.com. And it's just like, I keep apologizing. So I'm like, I don't think people followed me for this, but here it is. Here's some more.
As somebody who didn't originally follow you for that, I don't apologize.
It's been great. Okay.
We're all enjoying it.
It's been great. Thank you so much again. Until next time, everyone, love the things you love and tell everyone about them. Bye. Bye.
The Fandom Show is produced by Andrew Ive and me as part of the From Superheroes Network. For more great podcasts like this, as well as webcomics, articles, and so much more, visit FromSuperheroes.com.